And you're very welcome back to Kilkenny Today here with Eugene Doyle until 6 p.m. Now it's time for our weekly astronomy spot as we welcome back David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. David, how are you?
Fantastic.
Good, good. Now, David, we'll just start. There are potential seismic shifts in the U.S. space program following reports of drastic budget cuts proposed by the Trump administration. A recent article by Eric Berger, senior space editor at Ars Technica, reveals a draft budget request slashing NASA's science funding by nearly 50%, threatening missions like the Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope, Mars Sample Return, and even the future of the Goddard Space Flight Center. The proposed budget cuts would gut NASA's science missions directors, including cancelling the nearly completed Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope. How significant is this telescope, and what would its loss mean for astronomy compared to, say, the Hubble or JWST?
Well, these are giant survey telescopes, and the one thing about surveying the whole sky is you never really know what you're going to find. So the James Webb and the Hubble Space Telescope, they're aimed at things we know about that have been found in other surveys, and that we want to have a really close-up look. So when you're into a survey telescope, you're covering the whole universe, so you're going to find things that you're interested in, but also a lot of things that you just don't know about.
Okay. Now, the cuts...
So it's putting us in the dark, I suppose. And this is a terrible development for Trump, who especially said space was going to be one of his priorities at his inauguration.
And he
cutting it seems to be. And it's only a fraction of the national budget. And NASA is such a huge showpiece for the American. You want to make America great again, make NASA even greater than it already is, not the other way around.
And wasn't it Donald Trump that in his last term created Space Force?
Yeah. Now, to be fair, a lot of that work was already being done in the Air Force. But, you know, he focused it in a little bit more, I suppose. There are people who are for it and against it. That wasn't really about the kind of science budget that's been cut last week. It's not a definite cut yet, but it's a proposal. And Congress, I'm sure, will argue about it. But there are ways that if an administration wants to force something like this through that they can. They can delay things. They can force the agency, in this case NASA, to actually take the cuts while they're debating it. And then, of course, it's a done deal after that. You know, if you let some of your key scientists go, you can't easily get them back.
Okay.
So it's a terrible development, and researchers in the U.S. must be pulling their hair out. And people around the world who cooperate with them, it's a very international subject, will likewise be surprised at such a cut, such an important area. And if you want to make your economy great again, what you do is you invest in basic science. You don't know what spin-offs you're going to get from basic science. For instance, the one that JFK spurred on when he said we're going to put a man on the moon in the 1960s led to all the electronics industry that we have today. I mean, it was there, but it had to be miniaturized fast to beat the Russians to the moon. And we are benefiting from that legacy of a multi-trillion dollar industry. And you just don't know what's going to come out of basic science.
For sure.
That's why you should always invest a certain percentage of your budget, and
okay,
you know, you'll end up being the world's best economy.
And then, David, the cuts, if implemented, target planetary science, Earth science and astrophysics areas behind milestones like Mars Rover, and the climate research. Could this mark a retreat from NASA's role as a leader in scientific discovery? And if so, what might fill the gap if it was to go ahead?
Well, it's very hard for anybody to fill the gap when you've got the biggest economy in the world funding NASA. Even the world's richest men, we know who they are, who have an interest in space, haven't got the kind of budget the governments have. And so no one's going to take up the gauntlet. In fact, the people that have said they're going to Mars gung-ho are the Chinese. So it may very well end up being the red planet in more ways than one. and Trump could get left behind. And, you know, there's a rover on Mars dropping off canisters at the moment, which are supposed to be collected by this future mission, and they're just going to sit on the surface of Mars. I won't say all that money wasted, but all that opportunity to find out in an Earth-sized laboratory what exactly is going on the rocks of Mars, because you can only send so many experiments to Mars to do in situ. Getting stuff back to the Earth opens up to the entire world's scientists and scientific equipment. And although it was going way over budget, it has to be said, it was going to be a phenomenally important mission, because if we find life on Mars that independently evolves compared to the life on the Earth, then it can happen twice in the one solar system. It must mean that the universe is teeming with at least simple life. Whether it evolves into intelligent life is another story, but it would be a very important stepping stone on the way up to finding out, are we alone?
Now, the article also suggests that these cuts could force the closure of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, a hub for 10,000 staff and contractors. How might such a move impact international partnerships and ongoing missions reliant on Goddard's expertise?
Well, Goddard's such a big institution. I'm not sure personally of the length and breadth of its research. I know they have very active solar physics people because some of them have come back to Ireland. Professor Peter Gallagher comes to mind. He was a young member of Astronomy Ireland, came to our lectures in his early days, went off to do his degree in Queen's University, went to the Goddard Space Flight Center and came back to Ireland then in Trinity College, and now he's in the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies as the head professor of Dunsink Observatory. So there's a career path to keep in mind that went through Goddard with an Irish link. But, you know, 10,000 people, a lot of them are admin staff, but some of the world's greatest research scientists are based there. A number of times we've quoted discoveries made at Goddard in our magazine. You know, it's tragic to think that there wouldn't be any more of that in the future. All that we can hope is that all these cuts get reversed in 4 years' time, because anybody who's clever about this will see that this is the kind of research you spend your money on. Yeah. Maybe you want to make things more efficient, fair enough, but not cutting the science budget in half.
Okay, and we must remember they're only draft. It's their draft proposals at the moment, so hopefully there will be common sense will prevail at the end of the day there, and that the likes of Mars to mission to Mars and all of those things won't be compromised. Now, David, on to another subject. Astronomers are witnessing a rare cosmic event, a supermassive black hole at the center of a distant galaxy, and it's, quote, waking up, emitting powerful X-ray flares in mysterious repeating bursts. This unprecedented behavior observed in the Virgo constellation challenges existing theories about black holes and could reshape our understanding of these cosmic giants. I suppose, first, David, I'll ask you, just tell our listeners, what is a black hole?
Yeah, black holes are a favourite amongst even the general public and cosmologists, because they're the most exotic things in the universe. They're a place where the gravity is so strong, not even light, the fastest thing in the universe, could escape them, hence the word black. It turns out that most of the black holes are actually extremely bright, not because of the black hole itself, but because of what it does to any material near it. And it's like water churning down a plug hole. It swirls around into this big accretion disk, and that rubs off itself, causing friction, which heats the material up till it's glowing hotter than white hot. It's glowing in X-rays. We can't see X-rays, but if you could make something extremely hot, it would be glowing in X-rays. And that's what they've detected, these X-ray bursts coming off. It shows that some exotic physics is going on. So there are areas where something very dense is stopping light from escaping. From it, making it a black hole, and then its gravity surrounding it is doing all kinds of crazy things as well. And there's a huge one, 5 million times the mass of our sun, at the center of our galaxy, and we think at the center of all galaxies. In fact, the one at the center of our galaxy, there are ones 1,000 times bigger than that. So they're very important. And it was actually an Irish scientist who discovered that The effect the black hole has sitting at the center of a galaxy stops stars forming as quickly as they might otherwise do. And that's given the Earth enough time to evolve intelligent life. So we actually owe our lives to this black hole that one day in the far distant future will gobble up our entire galaxy. But without it, we wouldn't be here today. So they're fascinating objects on so many levels.
And David, what exactly does it mean for a black hole to, quote, wake up? And why is this event in the Virgo constellation so unusual?
Yeah, well, we're not sort of shoveling stars into black holes minute by minute, day by day. Stars will occasionally drift a bit too close. And once they get very close to the black hole, they actually get shredded, ripped apart by its intense gravity. That's when they form these big accretion disks of gas and dust spiraling into the black hole that lights them up. And when that happens, the black hole lights up. Now, our black hole galaxy, the Milky Way, at the moment, is not eating much, so it's very quiet. And most galaxies you look at, nothing much seems to be going on at the center. But a few of them are extremely active, and we think they're the ones that are feeding their black holes. And so this is a great way of studying really exotic physics that is going on, because you don't get these temperatures, pressures, speeds, and the distortion of space and time anywhere else other than around a black hole. So scientists looking to push our knowledge of nature to its very limit love black holes, because they're the kind of laboratory you can't create easily here on the Earth.
Now, the black hole, David, nicknamed Anski, is emitting X-ray flares at regular 4 to 5 day intervals. What are the leading theories, if we know of at all at the moment, explaining this strange behaviour?
Yeah, this is the interesting thing about this story, that the bursts are 10 times longer than we've seen before, and they're 10 times more intense. So the standard theory we have of stars being gobbled up by black holes doesn't really fit that too well. So astronomers at this stage can really just speculate, then do some of the maths and science behind it to see would this produce the kind of results that they expect. So it's really speculation at the moment, but it is educated guesses. So the problem is there are more models at the moment than there are actual observations and solutions. But something must be triggering the gas and dust to fall in on regular intervals of 4.5 days. There are varying theories. I was reading some of them the other night, but they all have problems, is the problem with them. So I'm afraid we won't really know what exactly is feeding this black hole, or is it something we got wrong about how black holes feed? But then, why are all the other black holes 10 times less active? If you're living and working in this area, it's something to be scratching your head about and thinking of, well, this is a great opportunity to try and explain more about what goes on around black holes. And, in decades to come, we'll look back on this and we'll all know what's going on. I remember we had these things, quasars, that we didn't know what they were. They were point-like objects extremely far away. And we now know they're actually black holes that are gobbling up vast amounts of material and beaming the light straight at us. Blazars. We didn't know that decades ago. Now we do. So it'll be interesting to see what this particular galaxy turns up when the theories are ruled out. Some of them would be ruled out because they don't fit the observations when they do the calculations and computer simulations. So it's an exciting time to be studying black holes.
And I suppose a question on everyone's mind, David, is could this phenomenon pose any risk to Earth, given that it's 300 million light years away?
Well, not this one, that's for sure, because our own black hole in the Milky Way galaxy is only 25,000 light years away compared to 300 million. Even the Andromeda galaxy, our nearest big galaxy, you can just faintly see it with the naked eye. It's got a black hole at the center, and it's 2.5 million light years away, so a lot closer, and none of those pose any threats to us. There might be black holes left over from the death of giant stars that are floating around space with nothing falling into them that we don't see. We would detect their gravity, and we don't see anything like that near us. So we don't really think black hole threat to the Earth at the moment, and certainly not this one. It's just too far away.
Now, moving on. Today marked a historic moment as Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, launched its first all-female crew to the edge of space. The mission featuring Bezos' fiancée, Lauren Sanchez, and the pop star Katy Perry, has sparked excitement and debate. Is this a groundbreaking step for women in space, or a high-profile publicity stunt?
Well, it's definitely a high-profile publicity stunt, and that's what you want. But it's one where he's beginning to set the record straight. I heard them being interviewed afterwards, and as they were saying, there was only ever one all-female crew, and that was Valentina Tereshkova back in the early days of the space program when she was on her own, and that was a bit of a publicity stunt as well. But, you know, there haven't been as many women in space as men. NASA's next mission to the moon, they have said outright that, you know, they last time did it in the 60s and 70s, they put 12 white men on the moon, which is not politically correct these days. So they're definitely putting a woman on the moon, the first woman on the moon, and the first person of color on the moon as well to redress that balance. So here's Bezos doing it with a mission of six, an all-female crew. They only went up into space for a few minutes, but they went above what's called the Kármán line, 100 kilometers above the Earth, which officially qualifies you as an astronaut. And as I saw the interviewer interviewing Katy Perry after she landed, saying, well, you're now officially an astronaut. So you've got Katy Perry, the singer, astronaut. And she did promise to write a song about it all. You could take this bit with your tongue in cheek, that, you know, it's space tourists. Should they be doing this? Of course they should, as much as any of us should go on holidays with the money we have.
Yeah, but David, am I right in saying that Katy Perry, even though she's a singer, she also has an interest in space, has she not?
Yeah, I was surprised to read an interview with her last week that she has an interest in astrophysics. She didn't call it astronomy. She said astrophysics. And also that she's reading a book on string theory. Now, I'm not reading a book on string theory. I do read a few articles, but she's a bit more advanced than me in that regard. One wonders what she's making of it. But it's at least she's got interest enough to read a book on that. So perhaps we should be interviewing her for the pages of Astronomy Island magazine to see the length and breadth of her knowledge of space. And she's not the only celebrity. There are lots of other celebrities who have interest in space. Marlene Klass springs to mind. She was in the band Hearsay. Was famous for her appearance on Celebrity Get Me Out Here in the Jungle. And now is a successful businesswoman and still a performer. And she, on her website, described herself as a closet amateur astronomer. She had a 6-inch telescope. I've got an interest in these things as well. I was lucky enough to meet her over in the UK a few years ago. And, you know, if you listen to all the song lyrics in the world, a huge number of them are inspired by people watching space. I love the Coldplay songs, you know, Sky Full of Stars, which was inspired apparently when they popped out of a recording studio in the middle of nowhere, I think it was Wales, looked up, the car park wasn't lit, and there was all the stars in the sky, which in this part of the world you don't see that often. Mm-hmm. And that inspired them to write that song. So I think it can inspire people, it can lead people onto great careers, like Peter Gallagher we mentioned earlier, and it can just fascinate the rest of the public. So anything that focuses the public's attention on space is okay in my books.
Now, let's look at some events, David. I'm looking at one here that you've mentioned to me. TSAN is at 10 p.m. YR4 asteroid, BBC4. Explain.
Yeah, The Sky at Night, the longest running science program in the world. When Sir Patrick Moore was alive, it was the longest running program with any presenter. It ran from 1957 and is still kept going by his proteges, Chris Lintott, Maggie Adair, and Pocock, to name but a few. And we featured on the front page of our magazine this year this new asteroid, people may remember, was discovered just at the end of last year and came to prominence in January when we found out it might hit us in 2032. Got me on television. We talked about it a good bit. Front page article on the magazine, and it was all over the news around the world as well. We now know it's less than a million to one chance it's going to hit us now that we've measured its orbit and can predict it much better into the future. But the question is, how did that happen? Why for so many weeks was the world's scientists not able to prove that it wouldn't hit us? And as we measured it more, the actual percentage chance of it hitting us actually increased from about 1% up to 3%. Normally a few accurate observations come in afterwards and you can project the orbit forward much more accurately, and these things go away. But this one didn't and stayed in the media for that reason. So it's a fascinating object in its own right, and the story of its prominence and how vulnerable we are to finding asteroids at the last minute should make for great watching on BBC4 tonight at 10 o'clock. We love promoting The Sky at Night because Sir Patrick Moore was a great friend to Astronomy Ireland, gave many talks during our 30-odd years history as well, and a fantastic character and a great ambassador for studying space.
Now, briefly on this one then, the Easter's astronomical connection, Easter Sunday, is determined by a specific celestial rule. What is it?
Yeah, people might wonder, why is Easter not the same date every year like St. Patrick's Day is? And the answer is that it's linked to the moon. And the official rule in the church is that it's the first Sunday after the first full moon that comes after the March equinox. So we had the March equinox on March the 20th. Have a look for the next full moon after that in your Astronomy Ireland magazine. And then look that up on your calendar and see when's the next Sunday after that. And you've got the date for Easter Sunday. I think it can be as late as April 25th and as early as March. You can imagine if a full moon came the day of or the day after the equinox and then the next day was a Sunday, you could have one very close to the March equinox indeed. And it's a bit like our Starbecue event that happens in September. It was August and September in years gone by. And that's because we figure it next to the moon as well. So we have to make sure there's no moon in the sky. So we have pitch dark skies, not even a moon lighting them up to see the wonders of the universe. And this year it's on the 20th of September.
And finally, David, give a very, you have 20, 15 seconds, give a plug for Astronomy Ireland's monthly lecture tonight at 7 in an hour's time.
Yeah, fantastic public lecture about space exploration, human robotics by an expert in her field. And you can get tickets online now, astronomy.ie, 7 p.m. tonight, online. Get the whole family around the big TV.
Okay.
Show it on your smart TV or project it from your phone and enjoy a brilliant talk. We've asked her to talk at ordinary people's level for kids as well. 7 o'clock, once a month we do this. Astronomy.ie has all the details.
We'll leave it there. David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. Many thanks for joining me, as usual, on Kilkenny Today, and we'll talk to you again. Not next Monday week, because next Monday is a bank holiday.